Welcome to the Last Night I Watched podcast,
the film review book club style podcast.
I'm Devon.
And I'm Luke.
And we hope you enjoy this episode.
But before we start, spoiler alert.
Hello, and welcome back to Last Night I Watched.
Hello there.
Hello there. So we are continuing our spooky season.
Spooky season.
Yeah. We all know that horror is my bag, and I've kind of dragged Luke along with this. So I don't think you were ever really into horror before me.
Not massively. I do like kind of a horror story in the fact that it's easy to understand.
Okay. You like rules. I feel like you like rules.
Yeah, I like to kind of know where I stand and things need to kind of match up.
Okay.
And it's easy to understand that the guy with a big knife is something to be afraid of.
Yeah.
And I think with a lot of other stories, you don't necessarily get like that close cut. It's obvious what you need to...
No twists.
Well, no, I don't mind a twist. I don't mind a twist. But it's kind of the rules are like... That man, that person is scary.
Well, that's a slash. You're talking about slashes, not horror films in general.
No, but just generally, you know, things are scary.
Yes.
That's a thing that everyone...
Things are
everyone
scary.
Everyone feels, yes.
Yes, horror films include scary things.
Yeah.
So we're really going back to right near the beginning with this one. We're talking about the Halloween OG, as I like to call it, the original Halloween film.
Yeah, I mean, a spooky season has been running up to Halloween,
mm-hmm.
So we can't not. Do Halloween.
Yeah. And like with Halloween Kills coming out, we thought, let's take it right back to the very beginning. Let's shoot all the way back to 1978.
Yes.
I feel like this is like the godfather of most horror films.
I just think this is done very well. When you actually kind of break it down, and obviously we will break it down.
Yeah. Okay. We might have some differing opinions.
Okay.
So do you want to hit us off with a synopsis?
Haddonfield. October 31st, 1963. Judith Myers is stabbed to death by her six-year-old brother, Michael. Halloween night, 1978. Having been locked up in a mental health facility for 15 years, Michael escapes and heads back home to Haddonfield.
Haddonfield doesn't sound iconic to me. It doesn't even, like, dingle any bells. You know, like, certain things you're like, oh yeah, I've heard of that. Like, we were talking about Greensboro the other day, because that feels like it was something. Haddonfield means nothing to me.
Yeah, but I suppose it's like Sunnydale will mean nothing to other people.
But, like, I've watched Halloween. I've watched all the Halloweens.
Mm.
And still, it means nothing to me. You saying it, like, tonight is probably the first time I've ever noticed it.
When I did my synopsis in
so
my head...
So everybody knows what Sunnydale is.
Yeah, in my... when I did my synopsis in my head, when I did, like, Haddonfield, October 31st, 1963, my head just went... Tung, tung.
See, I like yours went there. Mine did like the X-Files subtitles.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, yeah, that's all I went to. Also, side note, I'm watching old episodes of Angel.
Mm.
I watched Buffy. I was a big Buffy fan. Never got into Angel. Now we have Disney Plus, and I saw it there, and I was poorly, as people have heard for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I still watch it. I quite like it.
It's kind of gritty Buffy, isn't
it? It's gritty Buffy. It's like a, and even the theme tune, I said to you, I was like, it's more of a mature Buffy theme tune. You can't rock out to this one.
Yeah. We're set in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's all dark and he's got a long coat.
Yeah.
Jumps off buildings. I don't know where it's going. I do know that there is a Muppet, like puppet version of an Angel episode.
Yeah.
I'm nervous for that one.
I feel like there's
going to be a musical episode.
I've not really been into it. It's been on. I've kind of watched a couple bits.
I've enjoyed it.
Watched some sort of flimsy props and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, him like bashing into what should be a pure stone column that you just see bend.
And it wobbles around.
Yeah, it's like, what's the point of asking him to hit that when you know it's like hollow.
Yeah.
Also, people who are Angel fans, why did Quinn get killed off in the first season really early? I don't know if anybody watches Angel or if, like, any of this.
So if anybody's listened to this in the 90s...
Yeah, Doyle. I think the guy's real name was Quinn, but he's called Doyle and he's Irish. And I almost shed a tear out of the solace of my heart when he died. It came out of the blue. It's first season. It hit me a certain level. They don't do that in Buffy. They don't even kill off key characters as quickly as they do.
Angel's grittier.
It's gritty.
Yeah.
Back to this film, I would say it's probably not as gritty.
No, I mean, I've heard this described as a bloodless horror classic.
Okay.
But there is blood in the first kill when Judith gets killed.
Yeah.
You can see blood on her body. So it's not bloodless. No. But it's not like in your face.
Gore, yeah. Yeah. But I don't know if they're comparing it to like a Freddy.
Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street. The slasher sort of. Yeah.
And like not as much as, no, I'm thinking Freddy with the claw coming through the chest. That's Freddy as well, isn't it?
That's still Freddy. Yeah.
Jason, you see a couple of cut off heads, decapitated heads. Maybe it's just, it's the lesser of all
the
evils.
It's less gory than anything else, yes.
So this film came out on the 27th of October, 1978 in the US, which is quite, I think it's quite late, as in going into Halloween.
Well, this actually came out specifically on the 26th of October, 1978, at the AMC Theatre in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay, so that was like limited release.
They trialled it on one cinema to start off with.
And the wider release was on the 27th. Why did they do that?
Because they literally, they couldn't get a studio to book it. So the guy that was part of the writing team was like a booker in his kind of previous. And he just booked a random cinema just to trial it because no one wanted to take it. And then it just spread word of mouth. And basically you send it's like so close to Halloween. This didn't actually take off till 79.
Oh, okay.
So it was just word of mouth, because there wasn't like internet or anything like that. So it didn't really have like the proper like big theatre releases until the following year.
Fair enough, because it didn't come to the UK till the 25th of January 1979. Mm. So it was a big old gap between the two.
Mm.
The budget was $325,000.
Yeah.
It grossed just over $47 million.
Yeah.
So that's a nice little return. It's got a 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb and a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is an insane score.
Yeah. Just one thing on the budget, really. So this is obviously by John Carpenter.
Yeah.
And he was quite particular about the cameras he wanted to use.
Okay.
So he actually wanted to use Panavision cameras.
I don't know
because they were like the sort of top of the line. It was just a brand of camera.
Okay.
Specifically a camera which is Panaglide, which is basically one of the early Steadicams.
Okay.
Which I think works well in this film because they kind of follow.
Yeah.
It looks like you're there or kind of you could be walking around the town. And seeing. The cameras cost £70,000.
Okay.
So of £300,000, £70,000 is obviously quite a big chunk to take out, and that's just on camera equipment only.
Well, I've got loads. Most of my notes are just basically their budget.
Mm.
So they're really, really tight on their budgets.
Mm.
Things like they couldn't afford a wardrobe department.
Yep.
So the girls had to buy their own clothes, you know, like Laurie and Annie and like Linda.
Yeah.
So Jamie Lee Curtis went to JCPenney's and bought her entire costume, her entire wardrobe for under $100.
Mm.
I assume she kept it because it was hers. So this film was meant to be set in like October, but it was actually shot in early spring in South California.
Yeah.
So the crew had to make it look like autumn.
Yeah.
So they bought paper leaves and had them painted and things like that.
Yeah.
And then they would throw them and scatter them where they needed them.
Mm.
But because they had no budget, after every single shot, they would have to pick up them and reset.
Find them all.
Which has a nice little crossover because Robert Englund from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Freddy.
He worked as one day on the set of this film.
Oh, right.
And his job was to collect those dead leaves from the set and then put them back out again when it was reshot. So nice little.
Yeah.
Another little thing. So people were saying in this film, like, this is Jamie Lee Curtis' first feature film.
Yeah.
And they're all like loads of things. But she only got $8,000 for this film. And they're like, oh, that's ridiculous for what this huge blockbuster is and, you know, her first film. I actually did the inflation of what $8,000 would be like nowadays.
Mm.
And I did it in pounds, so it might be slightly different.
Yeah.
But minimally, out of all of the calculations, it came to around $50,000 or £50,000.
Yeah.
Which is quite a lot.
It's all right for like kind of a low budget thing. I mean, actors are paid hundreds of thousands and millions and stuff.
Successful
now,
ones. They're taking a punt on this as her lead character.
But yeah, I did because
that's quite a lot of money. Yeah. One of the ones I came out, it said 69,000. So it's like it's literally kind of around that figure. Mm. But I feel like that's quite. Everyone's like, oh, it was only 8 grand, but actually, it was 8 grand then.
obviously this is introducing Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
And she, I think she was actually spotted from an episode of Columbo.
Oh, okay, love Columbo.
She's a waitress in that. And basically once they figured out, obviously, who her parents are, her parents being Tony Curtis and Janet Leigh, they were like, we just have to kind of see this.
Well, John Carpenter said that this was like the ultimate tribute to Alfred Hitchcock having Jamie Lee Curtis on set, because of course her mother was Marion Crane in 1960 Psycho. You know, so she's pretty damn iconic.
Yeah.
But at the same time that this was all going along, Jamie Lee Curtis was actually kind of being headhunted. So although she's a sort of new actor, she's been seen in like Columbo, they wanted her because of her family connection, but also Universal Studios did, because they were trying to get together Psycho 2 and they wanted her to play Marion's daughter, which makes sense.
Yeah.
So although she's just sort of, she hadn't become anything yet, she was definitely,
they were ready to make her.
She was going somewhere anyway.
Another random Psycho thing that I know is that Loomis, he's Sam Loomis in this.
Okay.
Sam Loomis is a character from Psycho.
Oh, okay. One thing I read about in loads of the comments were, like, they were saying the guy who had Dr. Loomis was, like, they were really lucky to get him. He was, like, a really famous actor. I don't know who that man is. Like, I've never seen him in anything.
Donald Pleasance. So, well, I can kind of understand why you don't know him.
Okay.
Because they're films that are not your films.
They're like what?
He is Blofeld from You Only Live Twice. James Bond, with scar across the eye.
Nope.
And he is also Blythe the Forger in The Great Escape.
Nope.
Yeah, literally like people that you just wouldn't know.
I haven't seen either of those ones.
Originally for Loomis, went to Christopher Lee.
Yeah, and Peter Cushing.
Yes, and Charlton Heston.
Oh, I hadn't heard about the Charlton Heston one.
I believe when they went to speak to Charlton Heston, he was actually working on a film called Will Penny.
Okay.
And Donald Pleasance is in Will Penny.
When they offered it to Christopher Lee, he turned it down immediately because of the low pay.
Yeah.
But in post interviews, he said it was the biggest mistake in his career. Like, the dude wasn't doing too bad. He was like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and stuff, so he's not lacking for anything.
Apparently, Donald Pleasance was drunk most of this shot as well.
No, was he?
Even like the very first shot where he's in the car with the nurse.
Yeah.
He was slurring.
Oh no, like, I hate when that happens. That,
and it's just like,
I find it so sad.
So when you actually watch it again, knowing that, you kind of think,
do you notice it?
You can kind of see that he's quite like, getting his words out.
Going back to the no money, people say about how the tension is really palpable in this film, mainly because it feels like you're walking through the dark. Like, you could actually, those shots, like you said, where you're sort of going through the house, like you're walking around, it's like you're going around a dark house, and it's quite tension filled, palpable, all of that. They actually did that because they couldn't afford lighting. So there was no grey, or we wanted to have this really dark sort of feeling.
Yeah.
They could not afford to turn the lights on, which is crazy to think about how much this film was worth.
Yeah.
And like how they couldn't have crew standing around the lights.
There is some very, very clever lighting in this as well, though. So whenever you see the dark and then you gradually see Michael appear from the dark, they actually lit that with a dimmer.
Oh, okay.
So that it would be dark and then gradually do it. And they did that so that it was like you were in the room and your eyes were adjusting to the darkness, which I just think is a nice little detail.
It is good. The thing is, I don't know what is up with our TV. I don't know if we need to change the...
Because it's so small.
I don't know if we need to change like the... you know how like on the noise it's got like bass and stuff? I don't know if there's a light version
contrast
of that. Is that what it is?
Probably, yeah.
Because when you see something in the black, there's been like a lot of horror films where we've been watching it and it's like a face appear in the black. You can't see it. You cannot see it. It's just black.
Yeah.
So the only time I ever saw Michael standing there or knew that Michael was standing there is because the little tune changed. And that was like the, and I was like, okay, Michael's going to be standing there.
Yeah, he's there somewhere.
Yeah. And that's the extent of my creepiness. I was like, okay, he must be in the air somewhere.
Yeah. Just speaking about Michael. So John Carpenter originally made a film called The Anderson Alamo.
Okay.
Which was released in the US and did nothing, basically.
Fair enough.
And then they released it over here under the name Assault on Precinct 13.
Oh, I've heard of this one.
Exactly.
I have not watched it.
It did really, really well over here. And the London Film Festival actually asked whether they could include it in the 1977 Film Festival. And the person that rang them was a Michael Myers.
Oh, that's cool.
So they actually used his name as like a nod to Michael Myers, because that was John Carpenter's basically big break. I believe his wife, Michael Myers, the film thing, actually asked for their cut of the proceeds from Halloween, and they said no.
That's so cheeky. My God, imagine doing that. You must have some big old kahunas to do that.
I just thought it was funny that his wife kind of asked.
Yeah, but you could imagine that wife being like sitting there and being like, do you imagine how much money you could have? They're just wasting it, and you're sitting here on the sofa not saying anything.
Yeah.
Like, you could sort of see him sort of there sipping a beer and she's seething away over there. I bet their house was really unhappy. I don't think they were having any peaceful nights over the dinner table.
Yeah.
Yikes. Oh. How did your marriage ruin? Well,
I'm married to Michael Myers. No, not that.
that reason there, that's why it's ruined.
Yeah.
Also, so they named the killer Michael Myers, and that's a bad thing. So did he not appreciate them getting the award?
Just, it was a nod. They needed a name for the killer, and it was just like,
yeah, but like,
brief.
If I was going to make what I thought was, This is John Carpenter. When he wrote, or his intent of the character of Michael Myers, he wanted the audience to never be able to relate to him. That was his goal, for them to dislike and never to understand his reasons. So if I went into that and went, I'm going to make a really nasty killer who is unrelatable, is just pure madness. Yeah, I'm going to pick that guy that he just rang me up one day. I would choose my enemy. I'd choose the person that I'm like, yeah, screw you.
Yeah.
Also, what's your favourite John Carpenter film?
I mean, yours is The Thing.
Yes, I love The Thing. Love it.
Yeah, because of the sort of sci-fi elements of The Thing, I do actually favour this over...
Oh, really?
Over The Thing.
I love The Thing. There's something so good about The Thing.
Yeah, no, I...
Plus, it's got a link to Dante's Peak, which is always good.
Talking about, you said this was filmed in springtime.
Yep.
Pumpkins.
Yep. You don't get no pumpkins in the springtime.
No, they were able to get hold of three. So they had three pumpkins. And if you actually watch it, you can kind of make a note of exactly where the three pumpkins are.
What is one at the beginning sequence, one on Annie's, the Annie house that she babysits. There's one on there. And well, is it the one that they...
So there's three actual pumpkins.
Okay.
They also found a South American gourd that green that they painted orange. So there are some... gourds and not pumpkins, and there was also some just prop ones as well they used.
Do you know what annoys me so much that I did not realize? You know, at the beginning of Halloween, you've got the theme tune and you've got that pumpkin. Why is there a cut line between the mouth and the nose?
It's like broken. It's just
if you knew you were going to do this for the film, and I looked, no other pumpkins on the set that they were carving looked like that. Why would you do that?
I suppose it looks kind of... Bad? It does look handmade and, broken. And,
but it looks crap. So if you know this is going to be your... Literally, it's a black screen and a jack-o'-lantern. That's all you're looking at.
Yeah. It's iconic.
Did they just wreck it and go, okay, well, we can't get any more pumpkins?
Unless they would like they look too perfect. I don't know.
I reckon someone messed up and they're like, well, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
We've got three of these and a gourd. What are we going to do? Orange paint isn't going to go so far. So when they shot in spring, they shot over 20 days. So this entire film was done in 20 days.
Mm.
Which is nuts if you think about it.
Yeah, 20 days for how long this is lived on and
this,
how many...
To be fair, this... I really want to like this film. This film felt like it took 20 days.
The whole thing with this is that, obviously, like you said, they couldn't shoot a lot of... big action stunt fight scenes and that sort of thing, so they kind of went under that rubber band thing that they can just pull the tension as much as they can.
I'm not really one that likes big action scenes in my slashes. I just want more tension. There's just a lot of just nothing,
just standing
and
it's
just
staring.
A lot of standing and staring. The thing what really lets this down is when I was a kid, I was really ill, so I camped out in the living room most of the time. And it was kind of a rule where, and I was the youngest child, so I mainly got, like, fitted in where my sisters would let me. But it was kind of a rule that after school, Diagnosis Murder would be on.
Okay.
And I would lie on my couch being poorly and watch Diagnosis Murder.
Yeah.
And it was like, my mum would have to wake me up from a nap to watch Diagnosis. If I didn't, I was cranky as hell. Like, I want to know what Dick Van Dyke is up to with his son and a little beach house property. Thank you very much. And so it was like an ending. So I can't remember where my mum was, but there I was on the couch waiting for my Diagnosis Murder to come on. And my sister comes in with her Halloween VHS. And she goes, you need to get out. I need to watch this for an art class.
Okay.
And I said, no, it's Diagnosis Murder time. She was like, yeah, you need to get out. And I was like, nope.
So you've got a history with this film.
Yeah, well, it gets better. So I refused to leave because it was time to go and solve some murders. Good times, good times.
Yep.
Anyway, she put the film on. And it just said the start of it where, like, Michael was popping out of bushes and, like, in the iconic sheets
bit. Yeah, yeah.
And in my head, that was flipping terrifying. And I was like, yep, I'm noping out of this. Thanks very much.
Mm.
But in my head, for some reason, he had his white face. He was wearing a very nice suit.
Okay.
Like a very nice, put-together, Undertaker-esque suit.
Okay.
So for years, I didn't know that this film was that film.
Okay.
Because I was like, Michael, the guy that I saw in whatever film my sister put on was very well presented.
It's Sir Michael Myers.
Yeah. He was, and it was really creepy. Seeing a guy stand out in some, fair enough, Michael Myers standing out there wasn't exactly a treat.
Yeah.
But having a guy that's just standing there in a pristine suit, just standing there, is creepy as hell.
Yeah.
That's more creepy than a guy standing out there in a boiler suit.
The one thing I didn't actually kind of properly clock till this watching is that they justify everything. Because, like, I've never understood, like where the mask comes from and where the...
We just picked it up off the floor.
No, he gets the mask from... He breaks into that the costume shop and steals some stuff at one point. You know, they said, oh, we've had a break-in.
Oh, I didn't.
And they've stolen stuff. And then...
I just saw him pick it off the floor and he's creeping on watching his sister.
Oh, no, the mask that he has, the Michael Myers mask.
Oh, old Michael.
Old Michael,
I thought you were talking about young Michael. Yeah.
Yeah, he breaks into that shop. And then also the boiler suit and the stealing the... I don't understand why he didn't steal the car.
Because he liked the one that he stole from the nurse. Maybe it was... Maybe the other one was a stick.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he's been in hospital this entire time. That's what, apparently, when reading all these reviews, a lot of people are very angry that Mike Myers was able to drive in a car.
But then they even explain that. I've always said, why did it? And they're like, oh, maybe he learned from somebody else. Yeah. And I'm like, they're literally getting every question that you could have.
I drove Luke's car this weekend and yours is an automatic.
Yeah.
You put your foot down to go and you put, and then you change it to stop. It is so easy.
Yeah.
Like anybody can learn how to do that.
Yeah.
Even I got home and was like, oh, okay, I did that.
Yeah.
It was, and it, you know, sometimes when you're driving and you get there and you're like, did I hit anyone?
Yeah.
Because I did that so.
Yeah.
Just it, and
that seemed too easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got out of the car and was like, okay, hope I didn't go for any red lights.
Yeah.
And it's that easy. So maybe the other car was a stick. I don't know how to do gears.
I'm not used to this, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. There's one thing that bugs me as well. So, well, I'm just generally disappointed with this film because it doesn't meet my child expectations. But there is a section where Michael Myers is having a fight with Laurie Strode.
Yeah.
And she pushes off his mask.
Yes.
You see it for a millisecond.
Yeah.
There is no way, ever, that man who got the mask pulled up is 21 years of age.
No.
There is no way. That man, minimum 40s.
Yeah.
He is balding.
Yes. Yeah, and this is one of those things that, like, so many people talk about Michael being unmasked. He's unmasked in the first film.
Yeah, because I was watching it and I went, oh, his mask came off.
Yeah.
And you were like, what? And I think you were writing. Like, so I had to rewind it to be like, look, his mask. And then I saw it and I was like, there is no way that guy is 21.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's had a hard life, but he hasn't had hard life.
Yeah.
Like, that man is 40 if a day.
Yeah. Michael in this film is played by 7 different people.
Are they all over 40?
No, because obviously one is the child.
Okay. Oh, yes. So what is his name? Will Sandlin.
Okay.
Is the young Michael Myers.
Yep.
And he is a police officer in LA.
Oh.
He had absolutely no interest in following a acting career.
No, well, he actually, I believe, was only on set for the last day. They couldn't get him any other day. And
doesn't sound like he was absolutely... Yeah,
and so they filmed all the other shots, you know, where, like, they see from his POV. And then you have the Michael that you said.
Will Sandon. Also, that guy, he might be a police officer in LA, but he could just spend the whole time doing, like, conventions.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what a lot of the other ones do. The guy that you see just does conventions and stuff.
What, the one that you saw that... How old is he now?
I don't actually know how old he is now. Obviously, one of the most famous people to be kind of the man in the mask is a guy called Nick Castle.
Okay.
He is childhood friends with John Carpenter and just came to hang around on set.
That's nice.
And they just said, put the mask on, go stand over there, and then go, right, move your head like this. And he was majority...
It's always nice to support your friends.
Yeah. So he's...
And it's what? It's not... What you know, it's who you know. And look, that guy's just Michael Myers now. Is he like Michael Myers in all the other films, or is he just Michael Myers in that one?
He is in a couple of other ones, I believe. But he's
got his
life
set out for him now.
Yeah, but he directed Last Starfighter, and he also wrote another film, and I cannot remember what
I've never heard of The Last Starfighter.
All right.
So it means nothing to me.
Talking about the mask. So
are you going to tell me the thing that everybody knows, that it's the Will Shatner mask?
Well,
it's been painted.
Yes, so they had two.
Okay, because everybody knows that the Mike Meyer one is a... Yes. Is it? It's not Will Shatner. It is
Will Shatner as Captain Kirk.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Is it William Shatner?
Yes.
I remembered that off the top of my head. And it's his mask from Star Trek, but they painted it white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And cut the sideburns off and things like that. Yes. So basically, they had two masks.
Okay.
First one was Sad Sack the Clown, if you remember, kind of a clown that had like it was really sad, kind of. They did the same, sort of painted it white, and they did it. And when they looked at it, they were
got
like
a really big nose, like a circular nose.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And they said, that's creepy. That's really creepy.
Okay.
So they were like, okay, possibility. Mm-hmm. And then they tried on the Captain Kirk mask.
Yeah.
I will somewhat filter this. They said, oh, fudge me.
Oh, okay. So one's as creepy, one's scary.
As soon as they saw it, they were like...
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Because
did they dye the hair?
Yeah, so the hair's dyed.
Yeah.
The face is painted white. The eye holes are obviously cut out larger, and the sideburns are cut up.
Have you ever seen one of these? Because there must be, considering how many Halloweens there are, there must be quite a few.
Yeah, so I... Not in person. So kind of moving slightly onto props. I don't believe I've seen anything from this film in person. I have seen pictures of one of the masks. Mm-hmm. They obviously low budget stuff. They didn't have many of the masks for the first film. The actual mask is in quite poor condition.
Yeah.
Crumbly, because it's just, you know,
a latex mask.
Latex mask white. That was painted white, and it wasn't, you know, it's just bought from...
It wasn't designed to last. Yeah.
Costume shop. So yeah, so it's not, you know, it's low budget film. I do have other props that I kind of talk from the later series, but I'm going to save it for a couple of weeks' time.
Okay.
Okay.
Ooh. One thing, actually, I do want to talk to you, and one of the reasons, I was going to probably wrap this up during my final thoughts, as it were.
Okay.
It's Jerry Springer that had final thoughts, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was almost like you went for the rubbish and then you stayed for a little bit of morality that Jerry gave. Anywho, my final thoughts, but... early. One thing I really don't like about this film, like properly don't like, because I said it's like the godfather of most horror films, it kind of laid down that rule of purity is your savior.
Yeah.
And I hate this rule.
Yeah.
I hate this rule so much. So it's kind of the thing where, you know, Annie, she, I think it's the rules, you don't smoke, you don't have sex before marriage, you don't ever change your clothes just in case somebody is watching you from a window. You know, God forbid you're seen with the item of clothing gone from by somebody who's creeping at your window.
Yeah.
It'll get you killed. Whereas the virgin who's at home is perfectly fine.
Yeah, I don't...
And I feel like this one rule, mainly from this film, has then been like a...
I wouldn't necessarily say...
cliche.
I think they're very established way before that. A lot of the kind of literally like, you know, you're saying Psycho earlier, Marion Crane sins, she steals, then she gets killed. It's kind of it's been done previously, and I think this is where we start to see that very much lean into when you get into the slasher films.
Yeah, I'm purely talking about slashers, because it's like even Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods.
You know, it's got the cliche of you've got the drunk, you've got
leans into it.
Yeah, massively. And it's just those sort of cliches. And I feel like this film is the one that started it all. So it's like you've got Billy, who was the drunk. You've got Linda, who was the promiscuous one. You've got Annie, who was the one that did drugs or smoked in the car. You know what I mean? And it's just like...
Yeah, I think it's more a case... I think these were rules that were established, but I think, yes, it's probably more mainstreamed.
It's like now rules. Like a rule that's gone into every single... You know, like it's talked about in Scream and things. There's certain rules to slasher films, and I feel like this is one of the big stepping stones. So I'm not saying it was the first of the path, but I'm saying it's the biggest bit of cement there is. I noticed something where people were saying this, and I can't remember what the woman was called, but her name was Deborah. I can't remember her last name. But
Hamilton,
she,
I want to say.
I can't remember. Yeah. She was actually partners with John Carpenter when they were writing this. But she, I think she was part of writer.
Yeah. It was. They wrote both. So she mainly wrote a lot of the writing around the girls.
Okay.
And then he brought in the kind of the lore, the kind of like... A lot of Loomis's lines, basically, like a lot of like, he's a devil, that sort of stuff is what he's responsible for.
Death has come to your little town, Sheriff.
Yeah.
And then the Sheriff doesn't seem bothered.
Yes. Blackest eyes, the devil's eyes.
Yes. So he's like, I could see Christopher Lee pulling that off.
Yeah.
Like, more, less slurry. So anyway... Deborah and John, I can't remember, but they were talking to someone, and they were saying this point to them, and they were like, "We didn't mean to do this. We didn't mean to set this sort of cliche." But what I think they were saying is that because Laurie was at home on her own, she had more time to notice somebody lingering around and like those cues. Whereas these girls were busy; they were doing their things. They were, you know.
Yeah.
Being with other people, you're more wrapped up in it, that they miss those cues that maybe someone who was on their own picked up on it.
Yeah,
so they kind of defended it in a way, but I almost feel like the deed's done now. It's out there, it's in the ether, and people are going to keep building on it and keep putting it in horror films, and it's going to be like a forever cliche.
Yeah, and I think there's that element of like, yeah, they're being busy, and they're being busy with what potentially teenage girls are doing.
Not necessarily,
but kind of just...
But Laurie could have been, like, elbows deep in a pumpkin carving, and who cares about the guy that's running around outside? I get very involved when I do my pumpkin carving, thank you very much. I just don't like the... It's always something that bugs me in horror films. When I see them sort of... You know when you see the beginning bit of, like, especially a slasher, and they're laying down the characters and the roles, and you're like, okay, great, there's a
that
drunk.
One's that person.
Yeah,
that one's
and
that
it's
person.
Just like, yeah, ugh. Yeah. Okay.
Mm.
And yeah, I just wish if that was maybe slightly different in this, we wouldn't be where we are today. And it wouldn't be such a cliche, and it wouldn't be such a perpetual thing in most horror films. Slashers, really.
Yeah, but I do think that, like, kind of like you said at the start, the rules are kind of are there. And then once you have the rules, they can be broken. A lot of people are afraid to break those rules.
Yeah, I know, but this is like, and it's always said that this is a classic. This is the godfather of flashes. This is godfather of horrors.
Mm.
So it's set those seeds.
The
now,
precedence. Yeah.
Yeah now yeah. They're planted and they're, you know, their roots deep.
Mm.
But this was the original. I feel like, I know, it, like you said, there was previous ones, but I feel like this was the real growth of it.
Yeah.
And it just always annoyed me. Like, you know, Judith got killed right at the beginning because... She had 2 seconds upstairs with a man. Literally, like, they go upstairs and he comes back down again.
Yeah.
And then she gets stabbed. It's like, okay, great. It's worth it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that I roll my eyes so hard. Yeah. They almost fall out of my head.
Yeah. Tapping the trivia barrel dry.
Yeah.
Kill count?
Okay. You do want kill count first or reviews first? You normally like
I normally like kill count first, yeah.
So, first one, like I said, is Judith, Michael Myers' older sister. Young Michael killed her.
Yeah.
She was stabbed. One thing I was like, you know, when he comes outside, when his parents see him and he's like in his like clown suit and the dad takes off the mask and he's still standing there with the knife. Do you see how how nonchalant his mother is standing there.
But how... It's far too long a shot.
It's ridiculous, but she's just got her hands in her pocket being like, oh, here's Michael. Oh. Get him again.
Why have you got a knife?
Yeah, there's just...
Drop the knife. I'm going to take this knife off of you.
Why? Where's this blood from?
Yeah. Like, parent but this child.
The mum, but the mum doesn't even react. She stays there with her Mac, which is a nice Mac. I like it. Yeah. But she's done hands in her pocket. And it wasn't even a shake of the head. It was nothing.
Yeah.
I was like... I know they couldn't afford things, but could they not afford actors? Like, was this just a stand-in and the person was like, okay, you literally stand there. Do nothing. Do not react at all. You are a stand-in.
Yeah.
She took that. She knew that assignment and she smashed it.
Yeah. It's cut as if they thought they were off shot.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. It's absolutely. Like, react and then we're going to pan in on Michael. Don't worry. And then someone goes, pan in. Pan him back. It doesn't, it's just a completely wrong shot because they're stood there.
I've watched this film so many times and I've never noticed it before, but all I could look at was that mother and I was like, how is she not doing anything?
They're so wooden, it's really funny.
It's insane. So the next one, we have the dead man in the bushes, which I didn't understand this, but you told me that he stole the boiler suit off him.
Yes.
Found out through my research. His name was Christopher Hastings. And okay. He was shot by Michael Myers.
Okay.
And then in between our second and third kill, we have a dog or a skunk. So it's like a little footnote.
Yes.
When Loomis and the detective were going around the house, they found what could have been a dog or a skunk. They didn't say. That was recently dead.
Yes.
And then also, sadly, Lester, a gorgeous German shepherd, was also killed. Mm. And he was killed by Michael. Then number three was Annie, and she was strangled by Michael.
Yep.
Number four was Bob, and he was strangled and then stabbed by Michael.
Yes, pinned to the wall, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then just he stared at him for a while.
Yep.
And then Linda, she was strangled with a phone cord by Michael.
Well, on the phone to Laurie.
Yep. So we got five deaths and like two dogs who had died. We have one dog that we saw because we didn't know if the other one was a dog or a skunk.
Yep.
And he was Lester, sadly, the one that died. And he was a German shepherd and he belonged to the family that Annie was babysitting.
Yes.
He's a nice dog. Very barky.
Yeah, yeah.
No problems. Also, which is the girl that hides in the wardrobe with like the slanty wood?
That's Laurie that goes there. Yeah, so with that shot, this is one of the reasons why there's more people that play Michael. So the guy that did the props for those built the doors and basically didn't trust anyone else and says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to smash the thing. So he put on the boiler suit, put on the mask, smashed through, one take, that'll do, thank you very much.
And he did it in one take?
Yeah, he did it in one take because he was like, if I mess it up, it's on me. I've got to then rebuild the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, so can you imagine the amount of pressure you'd feel?
Yeah. So he's like, let me do it. I'll do it. If I do it wrong, then I've got to go and rebuild this
thing.
And he just did it first go.
Those wardrobes remind me of Jonathan Creek. Do you not remember that? Do you not remember that, Jonathan?
No.
I cannot, to this day, if we ever move into a house and they've got those slanty wardrobes with the bits, they're getting ripped out straight away. There's a one that someone gets like stabbed through them.
Okay.
And then, like, blood comes out, but they get literally someone puts, like, the knife in between.
Mm.
And it's a Jonathan Creek bit, and it was terrifying.
I remember three Jonathan Creek episodes.
The garage one, the paint can.
The skeleton paint can, yeah.
The one with the clocks. There was one with a lot of clocks.
No.
Do you remember the premises?
I remember there's one with clocks, but I don't remember. Okay. So it was skeleton paint can thing.
Yeah.
The long distance window. What you saw and what you didn't see.
Oh, yeah. It was a lady in an office. It was a man in an office block. Yeah.
And then the alien one. The really weird, like, full-on X-Files episode.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure the alien one is the slanted wardrobe one. And then it had something to do with Cyclops as well.
Yeah.
But it was all about a CD that was doing...
Yeah. Oh, the weird bathtub one as well that opened.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember the one where it was the man that lived in the house and he was like, oh, I saw this lady at this time. And they're like, well, you couldn't have seen her at this time because she was dead. And he was like, no, I had a full chat with her. And he was like, no, they were dead. And it was somebody messing with someone's house and they were changing the, they put like a screen, a big tarp over it. So it made it feel like it was daylight when it was nighttime.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. God, we need to rewatch old Jonathan Creek. I'm talking like 90s Jonathan Creek. Yeah. I don't want any of the new ones.
The spin-off podcast.
Jonathan Creek. I could even, there's something about Jonathan Creek. It's his little duffel coat. Like, I don't fancy him, but he just makes me feel warm inside.
You just want the windmill, don't you?
I want a windmill. I want a windmill. Is that Brill?
No, I don't know, because it's got a deck. It's got
It's very nice. I'd love to have a kooky house, like a windmill or like an old church or something.
He's talking about at work, if you need to become an old man and live in a windmill or a lighthouse.
You would have to have a Westie.
Yes, yeah.
Like, it would just have to happen.
And a great big bushy beard.
Great big bushy beard. And a neckerchief, ideally a plaid.
That matches your Westie one.
Oh my God, could you imagine how cute that would be? Oh, that's like life done. I really want to watch Jonathan Creek now.
Yeah. Right. How many did we have a kill count?
Five. Sorry, I'm on Jonathan Creek now. I was just trying to get the theme tune.
Oh, it's a tricky one because it ends up being...
Midsummer Murders.
Midsummer Murders.
Yeah, I would pay, if somebody came up to me and I said, all right, right now, give me Jonathan Creek, and they gave it to me without giving me Midsummer Murders, I'd give them a tenner straight away.
I literally, in my head, Midsummer
Which
Murders.
Is like, doodly, 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 doodly. What's that one? Midsummer Murders.
That's literally, yeah.
See, I'd give them a tenner and go, that, my friend, is a real skill. It's like spelling diarrhea the first time. That's a true skill. There's not many skills in life.
Yeah.
What is Midsummer Murders and what is Jonathan Creek and spelling diarrhea the first time? True skills.
Yeah.
Can't pay for that stuff. Would you like some reviews?
Yes.
You seem really shaken by that diarrhea.
No, because I can't spell diarrhea and I can't think of the bloody Jonathan Creek tune.
You got no skills.
No. I failed.
Welcome to life.
Yeah.
So I'll start with 5 stars. Voyeuristic camera work elevates the movie into a full-blown experience. Yeah. You liked the camera work.
Yeah. It's quite wordy, but yes.
Next one is a little bit more concise. Theme song is a banger.
Yes, written by John Carpenter as well.
4 days.
Yeah, he is a musician.
Oh, is
he?
So
he was in a band. I can't remember what the band's called.
I thought you were going to say The Police then, and I was like, oh, no. Really? That would imagine if he was in a band with Sting.
I should have just said a random name.
I would have been over here. Westlife.
Yeah.
One of the most iconic films of all time. The cinematography makes the film and the historic context it was released in. I'm terrified each time I watch this.
I mean, it's not a film I'm terrified by.
No.
Because it feels like it's happening to someone else, and it's kind of like that. I'm just that it's the tension build up. I think that's
don't
the thing.
Find any tension in this. I feel like if you did my blood pressure on this, it'd be what I would sit down at most of the time. A masterclass,
so very high.
Yes,
like 170.
A masterclass in building suspense and atmosphere.
Just literally, just
masterclass,
what I said.
Masterclass though makes me happy, makes me smile.
A little bit weird.
Yeah. I feel like it's the beginning of a song. What more do you need? Are you not entertained?
Wrong film.
Yeah. But I liked it.
Yeah.
Like, are you not entertained?
Yeah. Wrong film.
Had to watch this classic horror movies about psychopaths who like killing people on Halloween. Grade A. I don't know if that's the course that my sister was doing this year.
Yeah. I was going to say, was it your sister's review?
Maybe. She was doing very well in school.
Art project, yeah.
Yeah, well, now I think about it, I'm like, what art project did you have to watch Halloween for?
Yeah.
But it seemed acceptable. My parents were like, we were not allowed to watch horror films.
It's the perfect excuse. What are you doing? Art.
Although, when I did A-level art, I did it on serial killers and terrorism. So.
Art.
Yeah, it was great. I remember having to justify how you become like the topic of connections. And they're like, what did you do it on? How did you reach yours? And I was like, well, I ended up as serial killers. Let me show you how.
Art.
All right. So I got these from Letterboxd. So they're actually 0.5 star.
Yeah.
Was low-key boring and that song got annoying quick.
The thing about the song, I do think it's the same tune about 100 different ways.
Yeah.
So it does change quite a lot.
The thing, I quite like the tune because, like I said, it lets you know when you should be noticing things. It's like Jason. It's like... Yeah, I did it wrong, didn't I? Yeah, thanks. It's like that. You know something's happening.
Yeah.
I appreciate that sometimes.
Yeah.
Not to sound thick, but nothing happened. He just breathed real loud for an hour and a half. I could have written this myself. I was getting so annoyed by how loud that guy breathed. I was like, you need to sit down.
You shouldn't watch Star Wars then.
But how loud did he breathe? But the thing is, it wasn't even like... Darth Vader's, you can kind of understand because it's a breathing apparatus. But this is just a guy just like... just needs to sit down and
inhale. If you tried on a 70s Captain Kirk mask, you can't breathe in those things.
Yeah, it's hard not breathing in the mask. But still, I don't make films of myself on a daily basis when I'm in a mask. Peer pressure is forcing myself to watch this every Halloween because I feel like I have to. I feel like this is a personal dig at me. Like, this is how I literally feel. Halloween is something I watch every single year. Mm. Literally every year I watch this.
Mm.
Every year I question why I've watched this. Didn't enjoy it. Nice and boring.
Yep.
I understand this is a classic, and I understand that this is the father of many modern horrors, but, like, this movie sucks.
But they know what they like.
Yep. I got scared and I didn't like it. So it's an opposite to that makes me happy, makes me smile.
Yeah.
It worked, though. It's a horror film, so.
Yeah.
10 out of 10. All I wanted was some death and creepy guy. I got that, but it did not satisfy me.
I got what I wanted. I am unsatisfied.
Yeah, but you know, like, sometimes you, like, want a meal and then, like, you need something, like, sweet afterwards. Maybe they just haven't had their pudding.
This is where you watch Halloween 2 and then Halloween 3.
Oh, yeah, but you can't because they're alternate... Don't, yeah. This is a whole alternate universe and, like, spin-offs and, like, one doesn't...
The franchise is messy.
Franchise is so messy.
Yeah, we'll carry on.
I'm done. Those are my reviews. That was quite a lot. It was 7 of each, I think.
Scores, I think.
Yeah, we'll wrap this up.
Yeah.
So I think you should go first because I'm going to be a bummer.
Yeah, okay. I like this film. I think it is classic. I do.
I thought you were going to say I like it. I think it's good.
I like it. I think it's good.
Thank you.
And it follows the rules of horror. I know you don't like that.
You're feeling like you just branded me with the whole thing. I like my rules. Like a rule. I like a board game. I like my sturdy rules. I don't like these unnecessary ones that only put the rules really on women.
Yeah.
Like, none of these guys are getting punished for walking around with no tops on or doing the deeds. Mm. That guy who, like, was upstairs with his sister for 2 seconds walked out of that house merrily. He just strolled out.
Yeah.
Whereas she got stabbed like 50,000 times.
Yeah.
Where's the justice?
I like the rules. I do like how they've made a point to answer questions as well. And that's one thing that I didn't really kind of really appreciate until this watch, where I've gone driving a car. And they have the mini argument about driving a car. The mask breaks into there. The stealing the boiler suit. They kind of put everything together. Mm-hmm. There's not very... many holes in the film. I do like the kind of attempt to have horror without seeing a lot.
Yeah,
I appreciate kind of that. And yeah, I do like it. I'm gonna go say 7.8.
Oh, I thought you said 78. No. I was like, whoa, this is gonna be out of 10.
I was thinking 1978.
Oh, 7.8. Okay. Okay, that's fair enough. I almost agree with the opposite of everything you said. I don't know why I dislike this film so much. I don't know. I don't have a good reason for not liking it. I've said my points, what I think about the rules, but, like, generally, I think what has hurt this film massively is seeing that snippet I did when I was a kid, and that scared me to my very core. Mm. So I tried to find that film and then watched it and realised, yeah, this isn't hitting it for me.
He's not well-dressed at all.
Yeah, it's just, he didn't... I think when I saw that, what I thought was a well-dressed man, it more seemed sort of supernatural. And that's what really freaks me out. Whereas this is just a guy walking around in a boiler suit and a hat. So, yeah, it didn't hit where I needed it to hit.
Mm.
And that's, I think that's just hurt it. Like, I get that now Mike Myers has gone into that. Is he real? Is he not? Is he a boogeyman? Like, can he survive all? Like, he's walking out of a fire. He survived being shot. Like, is he supernatural or not? That's a whole other conversation for another day. But this film does nothing for me. It doesn't scare me. Doesn't make me feel anything. I was just a bit bored. Okay. I was a bit bored. If I wasn't reviewing this film, I would be going through something on my phone. Because it just didn't hit where it needed to hit. And I don't think that's to do with it being an older film, because I like a lot of older things. And I definitely don't think it's got to do with it's not gory. I don't need gore to do anything.
Yeah.
It's just I just don't feel like the suspense is there enough. Maybe I've seen it too many times, but it's not. I'm going to go just a middle of the road 5.
Okay.
Which is, it's not great for the Godfather of horror films, but... All right, so it gives us an overall of 12.8, which is quite low.
Yes.
So next week, so we've started at the OG.
Yep.
And now we're going to whistle all the way down to quite, I can't even do the calculation, quite a few years to 2021 and go to the latest in the franchise, Halloween Kills.
Yeah, brand new. It's in cinemas and on Peacock, I believe.
I don't know what Peacock is.
No, exactly. So we'll go see it at the cinema because I don't know what Peacock
is. I am going to not do what I did with Candyman. I'm going to go to the toilet before the film. Hopefully there'll be some people in there. Won't have to just be alone in a bathroom with a load of toilets by myself again.
Okay.
Because
the mirrors were more the problem rather than the toilets.
It was the mirrors. I've learned from my mistakes.
Yeah.
So we're going to go around the world again.
A new Halloween film.
Yeah, see if it kills. I think Luke is more laughing at the face that I pulled. I was like, check me out.
I made a burn.
Yeah. That's Jonathan Creek.
Yeah.
There it is. Doesn't that make you feel things?
I wouldn't have ever got that. Like, if in my head...
The thing is, I remember having this conversation with one of my friend's mum in the back of a car when I was like 8.
Yeah.
About the Jonathan Creek versus Midsummer Murder tunes.
Yeah. But they're nothing alike, really. No,
they're both old and orchestrator. Orchestrator?
Orchestral.
There we go. Thanks, babe. Doesn't that hit you somewhere, though? Yeah. Like, doesn't it make your tummy feel things?
I had the same thing with, what are the two things? Crystal Maze and X-Men.
Oh, the cartoon X-Men.
Yes.
Yeah, that hits a certain way.
Yeah, but cartoon X-Men and Crystal Maze,
yeah,
theme tune are tricky.
Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, head over to our social media pages at LNIW Podcast.
Last Night I Watched can be found on all major podcasting platforms. And while you're there, please subscribe and leave us a review.
Last Night I Watched is also on Patreon. Pledging your support is the best way to help the podcast.
So we would really appreciate it if you could throw us a tip in our virtual tip jar so we can continue to keep watching. One take, that'll do. Thank you very much.
Time to go and solve some murders.